Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. This is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hadi Had, Mr. Broussard. If you're feeling loved and cared for, yes.
Oh, it's a good feeling.
Yeah, it was such a good feeling, you know. So I just celebrated my birthday, Wednesday, May 20th.
Ooh, just passed.
Yes, just passed. And it was a great day. Like, the Rona did not stop any of the love and affection that I felt from so many people. Definitely shout out to my podcast co-host who definitely held it down.
Hey.
She really surprised me with all different types of amazing things. Soon come, y'all see a couple more Instagram posts, hopefully next week. One of the presents that she got me.
Yes.
But yeah, I really do feel loved and going to feel loved again this upcoming weekend as well with the actual virtual brunch that I'm going to be having.
Ooh, virtual brunch.
So I'm excited about that. But I just was talking and reflecting about this last year has just been so amazing to me. And so
I mean to say something about that to you.
Yes.
Because the year of 25 is very transformative. I don't care what anybody
it is.
Says. And it's people tried to argue with me when I was trying to say, like, that was like, no, I feel 25. No, what is that? But now I talk to a couple of people and I'm like, yeah, it's the trends that we all made, we all figured out.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the year 25 or maybe, you know, something with the astrological sign, some planet was in something.
Right.
Because that stuff be making sense. But anyways, the year 25 for our generation, I feel like it's super duper transformative. And just based on how you talk about your birthday and everything leading up to
amazing.
It.
That was amazing.
Heck yeah. The year of 2020 is transformative because,
right.
as you know, it transformed my whole job. transformed my whole job
yes,
to being virtual and online. But today was actually our last day with the kids.
Gosh.
Not sad. I'm not sad. I'm not sad. Because people, like, it's just crazy. People want you to be so sad. I'm not sad.
I'll
be okay. But we did have our last day. We had some celebratory type activities.
Aww.
So we did, I'm going to talk about what we did in the We Love the Kids section, but just know that we had a... we had a good time closing it out. It was kind of weird. Only just to think about what we would have done and how this
right.
would have felt. Like, we would have been taken down the classroom.
Right.
We would have transitioned to the gym to give them certificates for going from 6th to 7th grade, which I think is dumb. But, I mean, I think cool to recognize that I just didn't grow up in a school setting
yeah.
where it's a promotion ceremony for 7th. We don't need
yeah.
a whole,
we
your parents
yeah.
don't need to be there. We don't need to say everybody's name
yeah.
every year.
It was 5th grade, 8th grade, and high school. That was it.
Yeah.
If you promoted when you changed schools outside
like
of that, that is like a DC, or I feel like it's a, in all the, or the school that I taught at, that was a yearly thing. I was like, what?
That's
confused.
Weird. That's weird. That's my opinion. When this episode does drop on June 8th, it is important to know that it's National Best Friends Day.
Yes. That's such a good thing.
So nice that you'll be listening to this as I talk with my best friend, Hadi.
Yeah.
Yay.
Shout out to all of our best friends out there.
Yes. Go ahead and love on your friends. Love on your friends.
Yes.
Moving into our segments for this episode, we're starting with We Love the Kids.
Yeah, we love them.
Because we do love the kids. So I mentioned in my update that today was the last day of school and we did some fun activities with the kids. We did superlatives. They didn't know what superlative meant, and I didn't either. I feel like until like the last 5 years, I just didn't know that there was a word. Like, I knew what the action
right.
was, right?
I always wanted one, but didn't know what they were called.
Okay, yeah. Super side note, in high school.
What were you?
I wasn't anything because I went to predominantly white school. I was runner up for like 3 different things. And then there was one that was like best body and I didn't win. I was like, if y'all don't stop playing with me, Palo Alto, okay?
Oh, my god!
And then the year after I left, they had, like, best walk, which is really, like, who had the best butt. And I'm like, yo, yo. But that's not what we're here for. It's not about me. Sorry.
I love it, bro.
We love the kids. Today, in my virtual classroom, we had superlatives. There were just a couple.
Sorry.
Are you laughing at my pain?
No, I'm, like, laughing because I'm just reflecting with you. Go ahead.
messed up, man. I'm really, I might be still hurt on that. It's okay. Me and my therapist gonna figure it out. Superlatives today in my class, there were two that struck me.
Uh-huh.
Please don't mind the noise in the background, y'all. It is what it is. Most likely to have the heaviest backpack. I just randomly copied and pasted that. Some of these, I'm like, these kids aren't gonna know this. I mean, as soon as I hit paste and enter, they're like, boom, 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 boom. It's all the same girl.
That is so cute, though.
Oh, we'll call her Jay. Jay. Oh, Jay's back with the heaviest. Jay. I'm like, what? I'm like, can somebody explain? And then they're all like, her backpack's so heavy and blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, okay, I just know my backpack's really heavy and I just have a lot of things in it. And I'm like, it just be the superlatives you don't think anybody's going to know. And then it reminds you that these kids have like conversations in life.
Outside of us.
I'm like,
outside of the classroom.
Okay, weird. And then another one was most likely to win an argument. And I'm like, oh, they're going to put Chloe on here. Oh, that's okay. They're going to put her on here. And I'm just like, and they did. And then I was like, I said win as in like you'd have to be right to win the argument. Then it was like, oh, Miss Black. She always win the argument. I'm like, yes, I do. I do always win. I'm so glad you know.
That's cute. I'm glad that they were so engaged with that.
They were.
Because the kids, they love like out of the box type stuff. And so.
They do. They like fun stuff.
Right.
Yes.
So that's good. That's good. Well, now let's go ahead and jump into our next segment, Two Sets of Notes. And this week for Two Sets of Notes, I literally was showing, I got this video from Atari. She sent this over to me, I want to say on Instagram. And it was this viral video, I guess, of this boy named Ramon. And Ramon is preaching, y'all. He's preaching a full-fledged sermon about how his computer wasn't working. And so it was the Lord and his Savior telling him that it was communicating to him that he does not need to do work anymore. And that he needs to take a rest.
A rest. I'm sitting here like, what is he talking about? You guys have to find
y'all
video.
Have to look that video up.
He is acting a fool. He has a microphone.
He has a microphone and headphones. And
his daddy must be a pastor or something.
When I tell you he preached a full sermon, and I just was like, I watched the whole video. I want to say the whole video was like 2 or 3 minutes. But he is so entertaining.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Shout out to Ramon.
See, in the two sets of notes piece of that, because, you know, two sets of notes is like you got one view of it and then somebody else's perception. He perceived that as, oh, the computer not working. That means I don't need to work. Ramon, the computer is not working, but that means you just need to get it to work then get back to your work. And I just say that because sometimes there's signs and sometimes kids are finding excuses.
Yes.
The way that song played out,
that was
an excuse.
Yeah, I agree. And his mom actually was on the whole thing. She was the one who recorded it. And she was like, you said something about him hitting her. And she was like, you better not hit me like that again or your Lord and Savior really going to have to come down here and help you. So yeah, but shout out to Ramon. Definitely do that work. Don't be making no excuses.
Right.
Cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. Key is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, hey, a queen of unboxing, and a lupus survivor. And Key is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Kian Cole. Let me spell it out for you. KianaCole. You can also find Kicking It with Key on Instagram at KickingItWithKey_. I'm going to spell that out for you too. KICKINITWITHKI_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life.
Now we are about to move into our segment called Concept Development. And for those that are avid listeners, you already know that this is the meat of the episode where we really dig into the topic. Today we are continuing on with the second episode of our mini-series on, let's see if you remember, special education.
Yes.
Last episode, we enlightened you on some history of special education so that you could have a general idea of where we began before we move into today's topic, which is modern day special education. So you're going to hear a lot of generalities about special education, but you're going to hear it from a professional because Hadi Hod, Mr. Jihad Broussard, now has a couple extra letters that you need to add at the end of his name because he has his master's in special education from Howard University. So he is our specialist for today, and I am going to interview this fine young man here.
Thank you.
So you're going to hear a series of questions, and then you'll hear Jihad respond with his expertise around this area. And we're about to dive right in.
Sounds good.
All right, Hadi, thank you so much for being on my platform, the Reformist Pipeline. Beautiful to have you here. We brought you here today to talk about a very special topic. And so I just want you to generally answer the question, what is special education? Because just you got to think, we have a lot of people, we may have some educators on here, some people from the 80s who think special education is everybody just sitting down in the basement. But what is special education? What does it mean now?
Yeah, and so, that's a great question, because I think when I first heard the word special education growing up as a kid, I always thought like it was like the other. Had like your gen ed kids, and then you had students who were not really in the gen ed environment. But the definition that I love to hear, that I think that is most important, that everyone needs to know, is that it's an approach to education that addresses the specific needs of students. And so what that means is it's a more tailored approach. And don't get me wrong, like, of course, the gen ed teachers are supposed to meet their students where they're at, right? Mm. But I think special education kind of really is a more targeted approach of making sure that a teacher is meeting a student where they are at. And so the goal, of course, is to make sure that you have this legally binding system. And I think that that's the other aspect of special education. Because, you know, in America, actually, I don't know if you know this, and I'm sure that you do, actually, but I'm not sure that a lot of people know this, that education is not a right, right? Like, you have to go to school, but education in some countries, it's like you have your rights and education is a part of that. And in America, it's not. And so within that, and within specifically special education, we have kind of this system that really focuses on how you develop kind of these guidelines for what is essential for a student who has a disability, what they need, and how we as a society, what we need to do to make sure that we're meeting them where they're at. And so the special education system it focuses on that. Yeah. And I think that another thing that really is important is it pushes us to focus on providing equitable access for students of differing abilities. And I think that that's very unique because special education looks different based off of the student. And it's not all, there's not like this one size fits all mold. And just because a student may have a disability that looks different based off of every student's disability is different, of course, but you can't take the same approach to addressing that student's disability you may be able to use different things that you use with one student on another student, but it may not work the same way. So I'm also curious though, like what did you think the definition of special education was?
Well, I don't even want to talk about my definition, but society or like conversations I have, there's like I've been saying this in my head that there, when you think about a term or a phrase, there's a denotation, the exact definition in the dictionary, the societal connotation, which is what society now, what we believe in society. Dang, I don't know how to put that in words. Now that I'm saying it out loud. So I think people get what I'm saying, though. The societal connotation is like the meaning based on what society believes is right, right? Mm-hmm. Or right or wrong. And then there's your own interpretation or perception. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people have based their idea off of the societal connotation. And we saw in our last episode that people with disabilities and people with needs were just put in a box or yep. put downstairs in one space. And so I think it's really beneficial to have you talk about the definition of it just being an approach to education that addresses the specific needs of children.
Right.
Because that's an umbrella term. It's not a box you in term.
Exactly.
Right? But
exactly.
we've been seeing it as, oh, they're over here. But like, they require way more work and so many different things to make sure they can get the same type of education that right. someone that's neurotypical or able-bodied is getting.
And, you know, and even with that, and I think that I think about this all the time, I always am curious to know, like, why we did not learn in teacher preparation, why we're not taught from the perspective of a special education student. And I think that if we were to be prepared from that type of lens, I think that we would in turn be able to meet more needs.
That's real.
And I think that because special education has been looked at as the other, we address it from this perspective of, oh goodness, like I have to do so much more. Mm-hmm. Whereas there are tools like knowing how to do a behavior intervention plan. Like there are a lot of different tools that special education teachers and people who are part of the SPED team that they use on a daily basis that are very beneficial for gen ed students. Mm-hmm. And I think okay. that if gen ed teachers were taught and prepared from that perspective, I think that deferring abilities wouldn't even be at, like we'd be, the conversation could be switched in a different way to where we're normalizing special education and we're trying to more so, we would be able to address the need sooner before
very,
students
very
were going to be able
to be evaluated. Into the process.
Exactly.
So speaking of the process,
yes,
what helps guide the special education process or the system?
Yeah, so this question I honestly was very puzzled because I think that kind of how we were talking about on the last episode with the history of special education, there are a lot of laws that kind of weren't really discussed until like the 60s, because that's when civil rights yeah. actually became a thing. Like, let's actually focus on making sure that everyone has equitable access to everything. That's kind of the general narrative that kind of happened during that time. And so just like we discussed then, the big push was to make sure that everyone had access to education, and it wasn't just for students who were traditionally developing. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, also known as ESEA, and that was developed in like the 60s, and the overall goal of that bill / public law was to address the inequality in education, specifically for economically unprivileged children, but it later was used as the basis for special education. So there were several iterations of this bill that started in the mid-60s, and the last one was resurrected in 1974.
So it's kind of saying like people who come from, well, shoot, people now, these Title I schools, people that come from underprivileged communities or low socioeconomic status, that's kind of like the basis of special education.
Exactly.
Wow, things come full circle.
So that was the first step was focusing on low socioeconomic status folks. Hmm. The second step happened in the 70s, mid-70s. And that was the Education for All Handicapped Children Act. And this was passed in 75, and this covered four specific areas. And it was services for special education were made available to children who had needs. And then secondly, there was this idea that we wanted to create fair and appropriate decisions for students with disabilities, because, you know, that's important.
Right.
And then we wanted to be able to establish management oversight of SPED requirements. And lastly, that we were able to finally provide federal funding for special education students. And what this initially looked like is providing a free meal a day for students, and then also trying to help schools provide equal access to education for students with disabilities. So think about it like this. It wasn't until the mid to the mid-70s that we are finally talking about, okay, schools are actually going to be places that are going to be serving students of differing abilities, and we need to be providing some type of federal guidelines of what that looks like. Not only that, but provide funding towards that. So before, there wasn't funding that was being poured into this. And so when there's not money that's being poured into something, generally schools are just going to do whatever they want. And so then we have like the situations like a Willowbrook institution, to where a school sets out to achieve one goal, but because they don't have the resources, they end up just trying to do what they can with what they have. So this bill, although wasn't really comprised of like everything, it wasn't the one size fits all type of solution that we needed, it was a step in the right direction. It was the first time that we were able to have some oversight of what is known as special education today.
Some legal acknowledgement.
Exactly. Something like, oh goodness, okay, there are people who are not traditionally developing that we need to figure out a system that's going to suit them, that's going to help them get to where they need to get. And it's not because they can't, they just may need a more targeted and tailored approach. And so that's the reason why I even think back to like when I was growing up, like their special education just had this like terrible narrative of it was a terrible stigma. And I think that that is what pushed me more to like want to know more about it. And I think that that was the reason why I was so like compelled to even want to be a special education teacher, because I wanted to dispel the narrative of, oh, just because you're in, just because you have an IEP, or just because you are a student who has a disability, that you cannot achieve. And I think it's the complete opposite. Like, I feel like special education is a system in which you can have access, and we'll get into this later, but the government is literally paying so that you can get more tutors. The government is literally paying so that you can get therapy. The government's literally paying so that you can have access to so many different resources that not all students have access to.
And I think the flip too, like we think about historically with that though, that because they didn't have this before, you know, people like to tell you what they can do for you, but when it's costly, they only want to tell you so much. Like when we think about special education now and how it has such a stigma, but it's like, it's really not the government running your life, because you decide what your kid gets.
Exactly.
And if your kid doesn't get the needs that you agreed upon.
Right.
Sue them.
Yes. And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that. And so after the 70s, in 1990, there was this beautiful bill that we call IDEA. And that's kind of what special education is comprised of now. And IDEA stands for the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And that, so instead of the four areas, now we have six. So we're like, oh, okay, like let's push for more. And so those six areas were the individualized education program. And so that's the focus on making sure students are able to have an IEP. We'll talk about that on another episode, get further down, but an IEP is an individualized education plan. And that's just for every student who is identified under the IDEA law, they have an IEP.
So that's one.
That's one.
You said there's six, right?
Exactly.
Okay, count them out so we can keep the listeners here.
Exactly. And so the second one is FAPE. And so that's free and appropriate public education. And so this is kind of building on to the last act where we were talking about providing federal funding, except for FAPE is pushing for free and appropriate public education. And so free, sped students don't pay for services that are provided by the school. And then secondly, appropriate, kids who qualify for these sped services, they then are able to make sure that the school is meeting their unique needs. And then also public. This is supervised by the public school. So this isn't something that's from like a private entity. And then the IEP team, just like you were saying, the IEP team consists of teachers, the parents, the school psychologists, and other SPED leaders, essentially. And they all meet to decide what services and supports the student needs. And like you said, the parent is vital, crucial on making those decisions. And then lastly, education. And this is what I was more so talking about, services for special education. So that speech therapy, that counseling, that transportation, because there are cases in which students may be placed outside of the public school that they were at. So they would need transportation to get to and from that school. And that's not something that the parent pays for. It's something that the school or the district would pay for. And so the third one is least restrictive environment. This has a main focus on making sure students are getting what they need. You need to make sure that students with disabilities are in the gen ed environment as much as possible. And so this is kind of getting back to, I know Willowbrook is like at top of mind because we talked about it so much in the last episode, but it's about that. It's about making sure that just because you may be a student that has a disability, that does not mean that you cannot develop out of that disability. It does not mean that you cannot, you can grow out of these things. It is possible if you have the right supports in place. And so the least restrictive environment is making sure that you are still putting that student in an environment where they are going to be able to progress just like their traditional peers. Because there are other social lessons that they still need to be able to learn.
Yeah.
And so that's the focus on your making sure that these kids are in the gen ed environment to the maximum extent that is allowed. And then also under this is the appropriate evaluation. And this is what this is another thing that's key. And I think that a lot of schools actually don't really talk about this, but in the identification process, you have appropriate evaluation. And you want to make sure that your student is being tested with an appropriate evaluation system. And so there's all different types of assessments.
Yeah,
they don't talk about that. And I'm like thinking back to like my assessment course, and I can't name them all. And then there's like biases within these exams in itself.
Absolutely, I've seen it
that
happen.
Either support and cater towards white students as opposed to black students. And that's the reason why it's very important that parents are involved in this process. You know what test that is being used, and more importantly, you know why they're using that test, because there's going to be certain tests that are going to be able to identify an intellectual disability, and there's going to be other tests that are going to be able to identify, oh, okay, maybe this is a specific learning disability. Mm-hmm. So that's more so, oh, okay, like the reading abilities and things of that nature. And then the parent and teacher participation, just like this is parents, like I can't say this enough, like know your rights. And that's what, so that's the fifth point, but the sixth point is tied into that, and that's the procedural safeguards. So like Lynn was saying, like, can you sue? Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times that I have not been sued technically the LEA, the local education agency, so the school, there's a school representative that would be sued, but I have seen a lot of school systems that have been sued because SPED leaders have not done what's best for students and
all the time.
Forging documents, are saying that, oh, okay, that he may need this, and that's actually not what the student needs at all, but the special education teacher or the special education person who was on the case was not doing their job. So they haven't been meeting. They haven't been making sure that the student was making any type of progress in any way, shape, or form. So make sure that you know your rights. And I think that it's just important to remember IDEA. And if you have any questions at all when it comes to knowing what you are or what schools are and aren't allowed to do, look up that IDEA Act. That really will tell you a lot about what is covered. And there are a lot of advocacy organizations out there
that
will support you for free.
Yeah.
So just also Google that.
They'll make sure.
So yeah.
So we learned about the process. Very many pieces to the process. I know it might sound like a lot, but like when you really break it down, it all begins to click. And even if you don't have a student that has a special need or you didn't have a special need, a lot of it, honestly, a lot of it still applies anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we think about parent and teacher participation.
Yes.
I know that like it means something different and direct correlation with special education, but there's rights that parents have now that they are not exercising. If you want something, you know, the power of an email, the power of an email. So we think about, there's similarities between what we need all the stakeholders to do with students who develop typically and students who don't, right? But then how are you, Jahad, how do you qualify for special education? Like, how do I know my kid needs special education, or how is a teacher saying that? How is it determined?
Yeah, great question. And so under IDEA, public schools have to provide SPED services to students from ages 3 to 21. And even if a student may need to be identified prior to three, there are ways to go about that. And so essentially you have to have a documented disability, and then you also have to need special education services to access the gen ed curriculum. So like those are the two focuses. And the process to be able to qualify is the RTI process. And we talked about this on one of the episodes, so I'm not gonna go too far into like the detail, but just a high level overview, there's three tiers. There's tier one that's focused on making sure that you have high quality instruction. And that's tailored towards about 80% of the students. And then tier two is focusing on targeted intervention. And so this is more so pulling like smaller groups and for students who aren't making adequate progress in tier one. And then lastly, there's tier three, and this is that intensive intervention. So that's making sure that you pull in that student, and maybe you're having them read 10 to 15 different sentences, mm-hmm. and making sure that they are able to do it and do whatever type of skill that you're focused on. Maybe you want to make sure that they are doing it fluently and not stumbling over words. Mm-hmm. And if that's what that focus is, and if that student is not able to increase their ability to perform that skill, and maybe that's something that you may need to refer them. And so from there, after that, after tier three, that's kind of starts the comprehensive evaluation process. And that's something that's normally done by a special education teacher, where, like I was saying before, they do some type of assessment that really focuses on what's the gap? What's the skills gap here? Mm-hmm. What can the student not do based off of the student's age and based off of the student's grade? And they look at all different types of things and different, like I said earlier, like different tests assess mm-hmm. different things. So that's the other aspect that I feel like people also need to really make sure that whatever, so if it's, you wouldn't give a child a reading assessment, the same reading assessment if they may have like a math disability.
Yes. And so that's important to note, because that's something that was happening before.
Exactly.
Or has happened.
Exactly.
Like the misusage of these evaluations, because there's just so many assessments.
There's tons.
And when you're trying to actually diagnose a student with a disability, you got to make sure it is the disability and not misdiagnosed, which we know often also does happen.
Yes, misdiagnosis as well as overrepresentation. Mm-hmm. Those are two things. And that's something that I talked about a lot in my special education program, because I was curious to know, are Black students, why are we being deemed as ADHD and emotional behavior disorders and Ooh. Oppositional defiance disorder. Is that actually the case, or is there something else that's going on?
Yeah.
And I think that's why parents and that's why advocates as well as teachers have to really make sure that you know your students. And so that's why the process is the way it is to make sure that we're not just throwing students into the eval section and making sure that there's a process that kind of gets you to that point.
That's real. That makes sense. So it's like my general ed summary is I'm teaching a class of 25 kids. 19 of the kids are doing just fine. So then I pull those six other kids into a tier two group, and like we're working on same exact skills. Some of them can graduate. They're like, oh, you got it. You just needed me to be one, like more of a small group, one-on-one type of feel for you. But then there might still be two people left that still aren't progressing on a skill. And that's like tier three. Like now it is literally one-on-one. And then if I see some difficulties, then we're looking to see how you can be evaluated and what you're actually being evaluated for.
Exactly. And I think that is important to note, like it's a continuum, right? So like on certain lessons, they may be getting it, and on others, they may not. And so I think that's important to add also.
Yeah, because it's based on the skill.
Exactly.
Kind of relates back to making sure that you're choosing the right assessment based on the deficit. So when we think about the fact that there are different assessments that are going to test different disabilities, well, what disabilities are actually covered under SPED, under special education?
Yeah, so there's 13 disability categories, but before we get into that, I want to make mention of every child is not eligible for special education under IDEA. And so just because your child is diagnosed doesn't mean that they will be eligible. What does that mean? It means that if a student has a disability, but that disability is not affecting their access to the general education curriculum, they're good. They're mm-hmm. able to do that. So there's nothing that there's no type of support that may need to be put in place to support them. So we're good. So the 13 disability categories are autism is the first one. The second one is deaf blindness. The third one is deafness. The fourth one is emotional disturbance. The fifth one is hearing impairment. And then we have intellectual disability. And that's more so looking at the fact of someone not being able to reason, problem solving, and their adaptive behaviors. And then the seventh one is multiple disabilities. So that's more than one.
Got it all going on.
Yes. Ooh, and then the eighth one is orthopedic impairment. The ninth one is other health impairment. And so that's normally what ADHD and ADD is kind of listed under. And the 10th one is specific learning disability. And that's more of the dyslexia, dyscalculia, dysgraphia. So that's writing, maybe reading and switching things around, those types of disabilities. And then there's speech or language impairment. That's 11. 12 is traumatic brain injury. And then 13 is visual impairment and typically blindness. So I know it's a lot.
It's a lot, but it's important to know that there's different categories.
Yes.
And like, to make it very real for some of our listeners, I feel like most people are familiar with ADD, ADHD, or you knew somebody in class who was a little hyper.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that they get an IEP, and we'll talk about the difference between like an IEP and a 504 plan and later on in the mini series.
Yes.
But to go back to what Jahad was talking about, like you're eligible for certain services, right? If they limit your access to education.
Exactly.
So I had to learn that in real time because I had a student in third grade who had a 504 plan because he had ADD.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't limit his access to the education.
Right.
It's just we needed to be aware that he had it and he had a lot of energy and he might need to go on some walks.
Exactly.
But then I had him again in fifth grade and now he has an IEP because his ADD has developed over time. And now we've chosen the appropriate assessment to show that it's actually impacting his access to the education. So that's important to like note those differences.
That is very important.
And later on in the mini series, we'll definitely get back to those. So what strategies, Mr. Jahad, can help students with special needs in the general education?
Classroom. Yes.
Carry on. Because I was going to let it slide, but go ahead.
No, but so.
Niggas want to call you out. Carry on.
No, so educators generally read up. So, you know, the document we kind of referenced towards the beginning, an IEP, it's this long it's a document that is long depending on the student.
It's a long document. They all seem long.
And the thing is that if it's done correctly, it should be long because the idea is that you're addressing a student's unique needs. And so every student is different. Mm-hmm. So you can't make generalized statements. You can't generalize goals. You're supposed to be doing whatever the student needs. And educators literally spend time, a lot of time reading these documents to make sure that they're addressing the student's learning needs. So whatever that may be, sometimes there's reading goals, sometimes there's math goals, sometimes there's occupational therapy goals, so maybe writing, maybe spacing. But there literally are tons of things that educators do a great job of spending time of using that document. And then
we'll speak more about that.
Yes, later.
Next episode.
And then so also educators work with families. And I think that this is something that we've truly tried to highlight throughout this episode specifically. It's a wraparound type of system. Like educators need to know that the student needs to know that not only the educator is invested in them, but that the educator is working with the parent to see. So that they see that investment.
The student needs to know that the parent is invested in them.
And that is very
academically.
Exactly. Because I definitely have had times in which a student has tried to try me, but if they know, hey, let me go ahead and get on the phone with moms, and mom's gonna say, hey, you know, wait, you did what to Mr. Jahad?
Exactly.
Like
trying to play
having those conversations, yeah. And but when the student sees that, they're like, oh, wait, what? I'm gonna get this. So it's not just this stops at school. It's also, okay, when I get home, I'm going to hear my mom's mouth or my grandmother's mouth about the fact that I was not being my best self today. So working with student families and making sure that everyone's on the same page. And then lastly, we talked about this before, but learning modalities is so, so key. Educators really do a great job of addressing students' needs by knowing their preferred learning modalities and their learning style. So I've had students
who love that word modality.
I really do.
And so proud to say it. Oh my God.
Like you would perseverate. No, but what you call it. So I just think that I love when students are like really engaged and excited about being up and moving around the classroom for a lesson. Mm-hmm. And not all learning has to be conventional. I love it when educators like really try their best to think outside the box. Like, oh, and even if that's like, let's go have class outside today, like that little bit of a switch can mean the world
Absolutely.
To some students.
Absolutely.
So generally, I feel like those are like the biggest tips that I feel like can help.
Those are definitely top three that we can say that educators are doing in the classroom. So if you're a listener, definitely something that you should hold educators accountable to if you do happen to have a student with special needs, or if you don't have a student with special needs,
right.
All those things, like educators should still be reading up on your child. They still should be interacting with you as the parent or whatever type of guardian you represent. And they should also be referring to the learning styles, which touch back to your point that you said at the beginning of the episode about how you're wondering why teacher preparation programs don't teach with the lens of SPED.
Yeah.
Because if they did, we wouldn't be having such a, we wouldn't have a SPED mini.
I was just about to say, it wouldn't be a separate conversation.
We wouldn't have a separate conversation.
Right. But shout out to all the special education teachers.
Yes.
And,
all of you.
And continuing to just love on y'all, as well as general education teachers that really do understand SPED or seek to understand SPED. Because I feel like that's a whole other thing. It's like, it is sometimes a taboo. And so, like, you do have to really
go figure it out.
Yeah.
And shout out to the parents who are advocates. Shout out to the parents
Absolutely.
Who have students with special needs. And you guys are rocking it and making it work. And we cannot wait to talk about, we've actually been really excited to talk about our next topic in the mini-series.
Yes.
Since we developed topics. We cannot wait to dive into IEPs. We talked about, touched on some points this episode and last episode. And I feel like it was a terminology time sometime at the beginning.
Yeah, it was.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I should know my stuff by now. But we will be talking about IEP. So thank you, Mr. Jihad.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. In addition to you telling everyone to subscribe to the Reformist Pipeline, the last episode of our mini-series is covering ADD and ADHD. So this week's call to action is for you to email us any question you have about ADD and ADHD, and we'd be happy to address them during that episode of the mini-series.
In the meantime, go ahead and follow us on Instagram at HottieHot or at MamaLens22. Thank you for listening. Please continue to stay safe and social distance, and most importantly, stay sane.
Peace, love, and light, y'all.
Hootie hoot.